Hello, Belinda.
Hi, Omar.
What is this week's Gratitude Blooming theme?
It is the Sweet Pea card, representing one of our wild cards.
This card always throws people for a loop because there's no prompt, really. There's no theme. It's just like, hey, interpret this art, and you're given this freedom to interpret it however you want. And that can be difficult. Why do you think that is?
You don't have a clear sense of direction, and you feel completely out of control. And isn't that kind of the whole purpose of life, is to like learn to be okay with that?
How to be okay with the unknown definitely is a challenge. I just had my 20-year grad school reunion this past weekend, and in a real-time sort of check-in, I was participating by Zoom in a hybrid check-in, and they're like, pull a Gratitude Blooming cards out, Omar. And I was like, oh, okay, I didn't plan on doing it. And the person who asked me to do it accidentally clicked the wild card, and I noticed that she like clicked away from it really quickly, you know. And I think, you know, part of it is like, oh wait, I want some spontaneity, but not too much spontaneity. And like, how do I be present? Is really what I feel like the card is asking people to do, is like, what are you feeling right now? Like, what is real and true to you?
And I love how much room we create in these cards for it to really be kind of your own experience. And even in the creation of the card deck, we thought we were done with the card deck at number 36, the Sweet Pea, which is the card that we're focused on this week. And what happened after the first iteration of the cards was we realized that we were missing a couple really important values from nature. And in the second iteration is when we added cards 37, 38, 39, which represent patience, courage, and grace. So those are kind of like the heavy hitters that are like, whoa, we weren't ready for that when we first created the card deck. And now we realize, oh, we need some patience and grace and courage.
So much. So, you know, this week we have an incredible conversation with Iris. We dive into somatics and, you know, really explore sort of the boundaries of what binary sort of things we have in our world. But before we do that, we also want to just share some reflections that we've received from our listeners. These mean so much to us because it just gives us inspiration to be patient, to have courage, to sort of have grace as we experiment with Gratitude Blooming, and this podcast is part of it. So the first one I want to share is from Charlie, and he writes, thank you for creating this podcast and everything surrounding it. I was laid off from my job a couple months ago, discovered this podcast shortly after, and it has been a big part of my journey ever since. I have leveraged the time I now have as a gift to become a better version of myself, and be more grateful is a big part of that. He goes on, and I'm just going to skip to the part where he says, our family, me, my wife, and our two kids, 5 and 8 years old, have now added the card deck to our weekly meeting. Each Sunday, we talk about the upcoming week, and one of us pulls a card and keep it front and center for the week. This week was reverence. And the very next day, there was an amazing rainbow, which was pretty much on the nose. So thank you, Charlie, for listening. We wish you well as you take this time to create that better version of yourself. And we appreciate that Gratitude Blooming gets to be a part of that.
And I'm going to share one story from one of our listeners who actually came to our retreat center on a group retreat and got the card deck as a retreat gift and has written us a couple times. And she wrote us while she was on retreat again recently. And here's what came up for her. As I was sitting, one beautiful, brightly colored blue jay flew into a pine tree in front of me. It hopped from branch to branch. As it did so, it had a very distinct call. I could hear the other birds with a similar call in the distance. A moment later, about 10 other blue jays joined. I watched in awe as their beautiful blue bodies filled the tree and listened to them chatter for another few minutes until they went on their way to the other trees. I felt touched by this special visit. I continued to stare at the pine tree, and while not at the same type of tree, this moment reminded me of the first season with the redwood tree and strength. What I remembered and felt the most about it was the connection to the importance of not only getting grounded in work as an activist, but as the Blue Jays, being in community and conversation while continuing to move together. Even the trees needed a network of connection to hold themselves up in community with others.
I shared a story this week in my Apple News feed, and it said, even listening to recordings of bird songs can alleviate negative emotions, right? That listening to bird songs can reduce feelings of anxiety, depression, and paranoia. And just walking around and listening to birds in your neighborhood is associated with better mental health. So it's just, I love how we get all these signs of, like, when we connect to nature, we feel better, like sound baths, forest baths, listening to birds. It's just, it's a real ecosystem, this gratitude world that we can live in.
Yeah. And isn't this the heart of gratitude blooming? You know, in the story of Christine's testimonial and Charlie's that you read, Omar, it's all about how do we notice even more deeply what's going on in nature to help us navigate the wild card of life.
And Belinda and I, you know, we really appreciate, you know, this sort of feedback is we're experimenting, like, you know, and I think that's really what I appreciate is that a lot of other sort of folks in this space can kind of come off as like gurus. They know everything and they're like, follow this particular way. And for us, it really is a much more emergent process of listening and receiving and reflecting. And so how do we do that in a way where collectively, we each know better because we're building sort of our wellness together.
Yes. And I'm really excited to really dive into the wisdom of this wild card sweet pea theme by featuring this conversation with Iris Pachoon, who is a queer somatic coach. Originally, they met me in the Bay Area, and they helped actually steward some of the land in Mount Shasta with us, and now have beautiful land in Wisconsin. Also, their work is focused on supporting the healing journeys of others and creating spiritual spaces for people to experience more freedom, hope, and joy through somatics. Just so much weaving of so many different aspects, you know, land stewardship, coaching, somatics, spiritual, space holding. And so what I really loved about the conversation with them was how to navigate the binary.
Yeah, I appreciated the part of the conversation about swimming out from the shore. And, you know, you're too far to go back, but you're still not quite sure where you're going. And it reminded me of the William Faulkner quote, "You cannot swim for new horizons until you have courage to lose sight of the shore." And, you know, it's that sort of balance of like, okay, how do I embrace the unknown? How do I embrace uncertainty? How do I break these sort of binaries that our brains really like to sort of set of like, this is good, this is bad, this is right, this is wrong. And there's, you know, a much more nuance, but it's still same time, like, how do you be clear about your intentions and your purpose so you're not just sort of like constantly blowing in the wind?
Yeah, or aimlessly at sea, you know, that's like, that's a little bit too
No one wild. Wants to feel adrift.
For too long.
Yeah.
And so we hope you enjoy this conversation and especially the practice at the end where Iris shares a centering practice that we can all do in our day-to-day life.
I grew up in Kansas, being in really incredible, awe-inspiring places, and also sharing that with my grandma.
And where in Kansas were you?
I grew up in Winfield. It's like a small town in southeast Kansas. It's famous for bluegrass.
I can't help but notice that your name is Iris, which is a flower. And I, correct me if I'm wrong, Glenn, but I don't know if we've interviewed very many people whose names, anyone's names is actually in the deck. I know like some people have like referenced like a grandma named Rose or something like that, but like maybe just describe a little bit of that environment and in the environment that you would be named after a flower.
I didn't grow up with the name Iris. It's one I chose for myself in 2020, actually. Belinda was like a figure in that story. I was like trying out some different names when I would go to the Estia retreats. My other grandma, the first one, the one in Kansas that worked in Colorado, was Barbara Pachoon. But my grandma Eleanor Redman was an iris grower, like a very serious, like she would take plants that she had like grown or bred, like go to the state fair, or like the county fair in Oklahoma City. So I grew up with a lot of iris and really appreciating their beauty and variety. She had like hundreds of different ones. I do feel connected to the deck in a special way for sure with that. And other people who have like plant names, which is like pretty common in like the queer and trans community. People pick like plant names a lot.
I don't think I realized that your grandmother was an iris cultivator. I know that you're very bonded to the flower. And so it makes a lot of sense that there is a maternal connection there. How did you go from living in this rural context to choosing to be where you were in recent years when we met? You were in, you know, the living in the San Francisco Bay Area, which is a totally different environment. What brought you to make a change in that context? And I feel like a lot of your story is also a story of identity. Like, how do you honor the ancestral line of where you came from and also evolve it to be true to who you really are? I just think there's something really inspiring about those pieces.
The first city I moved to was Washington, D.C., like right after college. I had gotten a job there, and I was really interested in like advocacy and policy change. And I didn't know that that kind of work was happening in Kansas when I was a kid. It was, and it still is, but definitely not as many paying jobs in that field there as there are in D.C. So that's what brought me to D.C. And then that's where I came out first as queer, and really felt a lot of like belonging and connection there with other queer folks, a lot of whom also had grown up in rural places as well. And yeah, when we met, I think I was living in Richmond or might have been farming in Marin, which is kind of the next county over across the bay, coastal Miwok lands. And there is something really wonderful about being in those urban environments. And like, there's always something to do. There's so many opportunities for connection, museums, bigger libraries, you know, community potlucks. I love the rural place I live now in Anishinaabe and Dakota lands in northern Wisconsin. And there's definitely like, you know, not as many queer people here, but there still are, even in our little town of like 100, there's still other queer people in the little string of towns that we live in. There's a lot more of us in rural communities than the stereotypes might lead you to believe.
Could you share a little bit about that? Like, that's a big point in your journey, you know, coming into fully into your identity and being able to share it?
Yeah, well, it wasn't like a one-time thing. I've probably come out to my parents alone like 4 times. There's been new facets of like, oh, it's this now, it's this. Still new things I'm discovering about myself. Like I first came out in, I think, 2008, 2009, something like that. And I could probably actually count a conversation I had 5 days ago with my mom as another moment of like coming out, sharing something new with her that I'm like still exploring and discovering about myself. So it's like a lifetime of sort of being curious and then choosing who to share those new like insights and facets of myself with.
Can you share a little bit of what that is?
I've been exploring self-diagnosis or like self-identifying as autistic, and like took a couple screenings and have been like, oh, maybe is this a thing? It's not something I had really had on my radar before, probably like 4 to 6 weeks ago. And there's a lot of overlaps also within the autistic community. It's much more common to be non-binary and queer. So there's like definitely like a facet of our my experience of gender and sexuality that feels like could be very connected to autism. I've been like sort of waiting to see if there would be a moment to talk to my mom about it. And the other day felt like the right time. So I was like, hey, this is an update on who I'm finding myself to be.
And what was her response?
She was like very curious, loving, pretty open. She's also an educator. So there's like a part of, I think, that world that feels like a professional aspect of it. But I'm also not the only person in my family that's considering that or has a diagnosis. So she has a lot of care and like curiosity about it.
I noticed that recently I've been using the name B more and more. And I think there is something around when we get into these like points in our self-understanding, it is important to mark that like, oh, I'm a different person. I want to acknowledge that I'm a different person now. And I love how you're kind of normalizing that it is fluid. It is, not one or the other, and it's going to be impermanent and it could change. It could not change. And you're just accepting that is how it is. We live in such a binary world. Omar and I, you know, it comes up a lot in our weekly conversations, but the podcast is like, why is it so hard for us to like exit from right or wrong, black and white, this or that, you know, and to be in that fluidness? And how was that for you in your uncovering? Was that always the natural way that you just embodied? Or was there a point where you had to like step up and say, I want to live like this. I want to be like this. This is my process.
I remember as a kid feeling very rigid with my understanding of the world. I think I remember seeing like a documentary about the Vietnam War on TV and asking my mom, were we the good guys or the bad guys? And she was like, well, and I was like maybe 5. She refused to sort of answer my reductionist question about a really complicated thing. But I really like wanted an answer, like easy categories I could sort the world into. For me, it's definitely been a practice to like unlearn that that binary, unlearn the good and bad, the perfectionism that's like so enmeshed in white culture, especially the work of Octavia Butler comes to mind as like an ancestor of inspiration. I first connected to her writing through Adrienne Marie Brown, who also writes very beautifully about change and emergence. It took some time to like embrace that, and I'm not great at it. It's still hard to like uncover new things and be in the mystery and be in the sort of like in between, you know, that sort of moment, swam out from the shore, but you're too far to go back, but you're also still not that close to where you're going. And that's like, can be a very difficult moment of kind of unwinding some old thing and not quite sure what you're creating in its place.
I appreciate this conversation around naming. And Belinda knows I like to geek out on the root word of words. And so we were talking about naming, so I looked that up, and it comes from Latin nomen, and it normally was just sort of like the help to sort of what family you came from. But then I was like, oh, nomen is also nomenclature. Like, how do we organize things? And the root word for that is nomen, which is name, and then caler, which is to call or to summon. And so it's sort of, I feel like what you are doing is you're summoning kind of what your name is, you know, and I feel like there is a unique invitation to really listen, right? Because to call something forward is then you have to listen for what the answer is. And I think that has been one of the major themes of our podcast or discoveries of our podcast is really how do we be in dialogue, whether that is in dialogue with each other, whether that is in dialogue with the planet, whether that is dialogue with spirit, like whatever. And then what are the different ways in which we kind of listen? And so you've gone to study somatic practices, and I would love to kind of hear what that formal practice is, and maybe a little bit of like, where did you study and like, how has that really informed your work?
Well, I first got introduced to somatics through an organization called BOLD, which is Black Organizers for Leadership and Dignity. And so I was in the community organizing world in DC at the time and working with BOLD interns and, trainees that were learning somatics. And so they introduced the rest of the sort of team to that approach as well. And I like loved it immediately and also was sort of overwhelmed, like I knew it was important and I knew that I wasn't quite ready. I was doing a lot of trauma healing at the time and the practice that I was in at the time, I was doing a lot of like yoga nidra, which has some lineage that somatics draws from. It's like body scan, gratitude practice, sankalpa is like very tied to like a commitment or a declaration for our lives. I didn't know it, but I was doing somatics already. About maybe 10 years later, 8 to 10 years later, really, when I moved to the Bay Area of California, went really, really deep in training. And my first introduction was through Generative Somatics, which is kind of the sibling organization of the Strozzi Institute. So Richard Strozzi was one of my teachers and ended up getting certified as a somatic coach. The lineage of somatics that I come from is very tied to Aikido, which is a Japanese martial art. But there are also some other lineages that it's drawn from that it hasn't credited as much or as publicly. So that's kind of an open conversation within the communities that I'm part of right now is what were those early practices or those lineages, those teachers, like Richard Strozzi didn't just make it up, right? It wasn't like this middle to upper class white guy that was like, here's something I just created, I invented. There were a lot of lineages that fed into that. So I hope we continue to get even more information from him and from the teachers at Strozzi about the real full story of those practices and those spiritual traditions.
Can you share what some of those practices and traditions are from your perspective?
Somatics is a word that many people use kind of just in place of embodied or embodiment. So it's a very body-based practice. I tend to refer more to like wholeness. So it's recognizing ourselves as whole people, not just brains where we in Western society spend a lot of our time, but the rest of our bodies, our energies, our connections with the earth, connections with the sky, the ecosystems we're part of. So kind of really like remembering the fullness of ourselves and ourselves as parts of these much larger communities. So it's sort of recognizing that we are these like dynamic growing people all of the time. And then we can have more choice about what we're moving towards or how we want to grow, the kinds of qualities that we want to continue to get even stronger in our lives. And then how do we practice those things so that they're really embodied, they're really available for us even when we're under pressure and we might be, our bodies might be kind of kicking us back into an old shape of finding safety in more predictable ways that aren't quite that, you know, new possibility that we're working towards.
You know, it's funny how people use, I think sometimes similar words to describe or different words describe similar things. And it's a fascinating, I think, to realize maybe, oh, there is maybe sometimes more common ground around something than we realize. For example, I went to recently go see a Ayurvedic practitioner and, you know, I just shut down a gratitude app and she's like, oh, did you have like a grief ceremony or practice? And I was like, not really. But then we'd interviewed someone, a shaman recently on the podcast who talked about this recapitulation practice, which is sort of like this relinquishment practice. And I was like, but I did do that. And, you know, I didn't call it grief, but I did call it relinquishment. And I was like, that's kind of, I think it gets to sort of, I think, a similar place. And just as you were talking, I couldn't but help think of, I for a while, I think at some point in my life, I was like, a Jesuit priest or something. Cause I have like a deep appreciation for St. Ignatius and a lot of the practices that he talks about. And I had never thought about his practices as embodiment work, but I remember when I first learned about it, it was around decision making. And I always hated decision making as this binary of either pro-con list, right? Rational thought, pro-con list, or gut instinct. I was like, those are like two like extreme, like I got either like create a long list or I just have to go by my instinct. And that's what I get for making big decisions in my life. I was like, that feels so incomplete to me. And then I came across the work of St. Ignatius and was like, you know, and he was a general in the army, got injured in battle and then was in the hospital. And that's when, you know, and probably to use your language from earlier, like the Holy Spirit came to him and he was like, but he's like, hey, I was just killing people and now I'm supposed to be like a priest and about peace. Like, how do I know this is true? And so he came up with this sort of discernment process. And I'm not going to remember like all of it like right now, but it's basically, it was physical. Like, what is my body telling me, right? When I think about it, is my shoulders tighten or do they relax or like, however is your body communicating? It's memory. So like thinking about like, what happened in my past? And like, how do I like recognize that? It's imagination. Like, does this sort of like open possibility up or does it shrink possibility? Connection to nature. And so like really being outside and listening to nature. And then probably faith. I think it's five. I might be missing one or two, but like, it's just fascinating because in hearing this conversation, I was like, oh, is you describing, and we've been talking about embodiment work for a long time. And honestly, this is the first time I'm like, oh, I think I finally get like what somatic work can possibly be from like a language that I'm familiar with. And so anyways, this is really helpful to kind of hear your perspective and then also begin to really acknowledge these other lineages, right? And maybe how, like, obviously Jesuits are still alive and thriving, but maybe the process of discernment isn't as sort of popular, or people may not be as aware of it.
Yeah, I love that. In my work, I really want to have somatics be super accessible for folks, like recognize the ways that our communities already practice feeling ourselves, connecting to ourselves, connecting to each other. If our ancestors hadn't had these practices, they would not have survived. So we know that they're there. And the more that we can sort of, you know, point them out when they're happening, like, aha, line dancing, or looking at the horizon during sunset, right? Like these little like moments or things that might be happening in our families or in our communities. When we really like notice and appreciate those, we can amplify the positive effects of them even more. And we can dispel this sort of like classist, like you have to be wealthy, you have to be white, you have to be thin, sort of repackaging of like wellness culture, that actually creates more distance for people from their own practices. We need that. We need the things that can help us that are free. We need the things that can help us that are like, that we already know how to do, right? That maybe we could just get a little bit better at even noticing how great they feel in our bodies and having that moment of naming that or connecting with it or pointing it out to our family or to our friends and having the beauty of it be even clearer and even more powerful.
Yeah, I mean, I think like singing, for example, is a practice as an embodiment. Like we've probably interviewed 3 or 4 coaches and or singers who's obviously practice is singing. And, you know, and I think this is an example where it's a matter of perspective, where we might look at a church who has singing, and you're like, oh, you know, but it hasn't been described to anyone in that church as an embodiment or a somatic practice. It's just like what you do, right? Like it's just part of the Sunday, you know, ritual or whatever day your practice ends up being in that faith tradition. Like, how do we really help people, no matter where they're coming from, sort of realize like, oh, whether you're coming at this from faith or wellness or like whatever, the practice of singing unto itself is healing.
I'm struck by how you started off, you know, getting into this type of healing modality because you were experiencing trauma and that was very personal and that was very serious. Like you had to find ways to navigate that. And then there was a professional context of, you know, organizing where then this showed up again. And I didn't realize, I mean, it's so people have been talking about somatics for that long because in California, it feels like it's, you know, popular in the past like 5 years or so, you know? So it's interesting to hear that, wow, this has been going on for a while in different kinds of communities. And then now you're, you know, working remotely, you know, from Wisconsin, supporting communities in urban parts of the Bay Area, and doing, you know, community work that way. But also then you are also taking care of animals on a rural farm and, you know, and so there's all these different parts of your life that seem very different, but yet there is this way in which you're showing up for these parts. And so I'd love to hear now in this present time, like, what are the somatic practices that you use most frequently in your work, supporting communities, urban communities, and also in your work in your rural life and on your farm? You know, are those different practices? Are they similar, but that you just contextualize them? Like, tell us a little bit about that, because I think that's really fascinating about your story. It's such diversity in the context and the communities that you're holding and are a part of.
Centering is one of the kind of foundational practices within somatics, within my lineage of somatics. And that's a kind of invitation. It can be longer, it can be shorter, depending on how much time you have. But it's a remembering of our kind of wholeness, like I said before. So we can do a centering practice that, that can incorporate movement or not. Like, so folks that are listening in, you can really just notice in yourself what is right for you in this moment and listen to that. So for you, Omar, it might be to move around the space you're in. You could do this practice laying down. You can be seated or standing. I'll do it standing today just because that feels right for me. But it's really your choice. And in general, one of the really important parts about practicing in somatics is knowing that these practices have a lineage and a history, but they're also yours to make right for you. So it's more important to listen to your own body and the wisdom of what is a good fit for you or not. And the practice is just, it's an invitation. It's one door into a feeling or a new way of being or way to grow capacity in yourself, but it's not the only way in. So lots of different paths. So if you want to kind of change how your body is, maybe you can change your posture or how you are in your space. You might notice your temperature, if there's anything that will help you feel a little bit more comfortable or a little bit more supported. Now is a good time to be responsive to that. Give yourself what you need as much as you can. And we'll start by just orienting to the spaces that we're each in. So you can slowly kind of twist or look around, however that works best for you. Checking out the space you're in, windows, doors, looking even behind you. Just kind of getting a little more present with everything around you. Noticing if there's anything in your space or in your body that's telling you that you're safe here or that there's support available for you. It might be like a chair that you're sitting in that you can kind of rest in a little bit more. Or maybe remembering your dog in the next room, or seeing the locks on your car door are down. Whatever helps you feel a little bit more safe, a little bit more present and comfortable. And then we'll just bring some curiosity from our space coming into our own bodies. Not with any like need to fix or change anything, just curiosity. So starting by feeling our length, you can kind of bring your attention to the top of your head. You can even place your hand there or pat if that feels good. And then just coming down your body, feeling the length of your head, neck, shoulders. Coming down the torso, feeling the length of the arms hanging all the way down to the lower belly, the hips, pelvis. Down the length of both legs. Letting the joints be soft. Feeling the feet in contact with the earth. And here we're kind of settling down and extending up at the same time. So for most of us, the spine will be straight, long, maybe a little more space between the vertebrae if that feels good to you. Whether you're laying down or sitting or standing up, just kind of coming to your full height. Without having to strain or make any effort. And here we can feel for our dignity. Like this is our self-worth. We deserve to be here, to belong, to have our needs met, to be safe. We don't have to earn or prove any of those things. It's just part of our birthright as humans, as living things on the planet. You might see if you can feel a little bit of your own dignity, or maybe you can look for dignity in some other living thing, a pet or a neighbor or a plant. And then we'll take that length and open up side to side, feeling the width of the body. If it feels good, you can wiggle your shoulders or give yourself a little hug. Stretch out the arms, whatever helps you feel your width a little bit more. Noticing this all the way down the body, feeling the width of the torso, maybe breathing. Letting the ribs open at the sides as you breathe. You don't have to force anything or do anything, really. Just the practice of remembering. Maybe feeling the width of the hips, legs, maybe where your hands or arms are touching your body, if that's how your body shape is. I'm feeling the width of the legs, left leg, left foot, right leg, right foot. And then feeling both legs and the space in between. Noticing your width here, you might feel what it's like to bring to mind communities that you're part of or people that care about you, even animals. Someone you can be more of your full self with. Noticing how that shapes you to remember those connections. And then we'll remember our depth. So feeling at the back of the body, maybe noticing the texture of your clothes, or if you're sitting or laying down, the support underneath you. Again, no judgment here, just feeling how much of your back you can connect with in this moment. You might imagine time, this dimension of time, history at your back, your own lifetime, your ancestors, transcestors, chosen family. Letting yourself be supported at your back. And then coming through to the front body. Maybe checking in with your vision. Letting your gaze be soft out at the horizon, the future. Maybe there's a vision for your life or even just goals for the day. Like what are you What are you facing in your life right now? And then we'll bring our awareness to our body's center. So a couple inches below the belly button. You can place a hand there or on your lower back if that feels good. You can also bring your breath or just your awareness into this space. This is our physical center of gravity, a point of balance, space we can move from. And if it feels good, you can notice what it's like to move from your center and take this practice of centering into action. Notice if you have an impulse below the neck. You can move at your own pace, walking, pausing, or even just rocking forward and back, making any other movements that feel nice to your body, stretching or wiggling, whatever way will support you. And continuing to come back to center as a space to orient to and move from in the world. And we usually complete our centering practice with a mood check. So just naming like one or two words of how you're feeling in this moment.
Well, that was beautiful, Iris. Thank you for the gift of that practice.
Yeah, just feeling grateful to be here with you both and for the unfolding of conversation and connection and practices together.
So, Belinda, do you have one or two words to check in with?
I think settling. I feel if it was interesting to slow down that much, to come to center and be guided that way. And so I just feel like I'm kind of settling right now.
It was definitely relaxing. I think I might have fallen asleep almost.
What would be your mood check?
That would be it. Relaxed and slightly sleepy. It's a good exercise. And I've been doing it on my walks of really just like feeling the different depths of length and width and back and forward and really trying to just sort of be aware of the space that I'm holding and the space that I'm in. So I've really appreciated their practice for us.
Yeah, it feels like a really intentional way to feel this, your sense of space around you. And I'm struck by how, like, I often don't do that. So it's really nice to be guided in that way.
Well, we appreciate folks listening to this week's podcast. We appreciate the stories. Please email us hello@gratitudeblooming.com. Check out the store if you want some of our latest gifts, including candles and card decks and note cards, journals.
T-shirts now.
T-shirts. One inspired by SJ, who was on the show recently. We're rooting for you. So yeah, it's a growing ecosystem.
Yes. Thank you for being a part of this journey. And we have some exciting things ahead with Gratitude Blooming. We can't wait to share.
Awesome. Cheers.
Cheers.